And I remember getting the kids, the girls, that night and walking to my car. And I think I can say this without crying, but I remember feeling a hand under this elbow and a hand under that elbow. And it was my dad and Jesus carrying me.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't expect that to happen. Mm-hmm. But that,
you're making me cry.
That was a moment I will never forget. And I said, I'm going to be okay. Girls, we're going to be okay. And we were.
How do you find joy in life's difficult moments? Life is full of challenges, both big and small. Come explore some sticky moments with the women of Reed Memorial and be inspired to find, keep, and share joy in life's journey. On behalf of Reed Memorial, join me, Joy Maple, for our podcast study and helpful resource page to encourage you to find joy in life's sticky moments. Thanks for joining us on our second episode of Finding Joy in Life's Sticky Moments. I'm here with Amanda Boland today. She's our guest, and she is from Augusta University Career Services, and she is the senior career consultant. Did I get that right? That's a big mouthful, but we call her Mandy. So good to have you with us today, Mandy.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
All right. So you know I'm going to ask you, well, tell us a little first about what you do at AU.
Okay, so I've been at Augusta University for 15 years now, or going on 15 years this month.
Wow.
So I am excited. I still love my job. I'm very passionate about what I do. And I actually work with students in medical school, dental school, the College of Nursing, and all of the allied health, and the graduate psychology students to help them prepare for their next journey. So whether that is some of my allied health students are trying to get into grad school, but then that's also helping the medical and dental students get into residencies.
That's a big job.
It is.
And, you know, I think it's been a little while since we've been in college, maybe.
Just a little bit.
So how do you stay, like, hip and current with all these college students? Is it a learning curve?
It is. You just work with students. And it's so funny because I will be with my age group friends and topics will come up and they don't even stumble me because I'm so used to talking to that student about that subject. So it is kind of fun. It does feel like it keeps me young sometimes. So I actually did an internship on a college campus when I was in grad school, and that's where I found my calling and my passion to work with college students. And that was one of the reasons, was it just felt like it kept me young, and I just love that generation, that age group.
So, okay, you've only been doing this for 15 years, and that's a long time in this day and age. A lot of people go, wow, 15 years at the same place. But what brought you to this journey at AU?
Wow. Well, how much time do we have? Because I am older. So I actually enjoy looking back at my life and seeing my sticky moments along the way that led me to where I am today. And one was when I was with an 18-year-old going to college, and I knew that I was passionate about studying people, their behaviors, their emotions, why they behaved the way they did, what made them think the way they do. I just loved studying people. So I went to psychology and I said, I want to major in psychology. And I had a professor look at me and say, well, I hope you want to get your PhD because you're not going to make money in psychology as a psychology major unless you get a PhD. And I was ignorant. I said, what's a PhD? And he told me, well, that's about 5 years after your 4 years of getting a bachelor's. And I said, oh, heck no. I wasn't excited about going on to school, to be honest. And
you like studying people, but you sure didn't want to be in school.
Uh-huh. Not that much. At the time, you know, I was just burned out of high school at that point. So I thought, okay, well, I was really involved in FBLA in business in high school. So let me major in business. Because back then you just walked across the lawn and majored in, you know, changed your major. So I majored in business. Hated it. Hated every job I ever did. So I think that's why I'm such a good career counselor now, because I know what people feel, you know, what they go through. And I got some really bad advice. It just really led me to where I am today. So it took me a while. I did a few jobs. My husband was active duty military, so we moved around a good bit.
Well, let me ask you something.
Oh, okay.
All right. You said 18, and then all of a sudden we were married. So tell me when we got married. I don't know that story. Tell me.
Joy, that's the story too. So very soon after that. So another sticky moment right after the whole career counseling thing, my father died. I was 18 years old over Christmas break. Wow. And my father died very unexpectedly with cancer. And that kind of encouraged my relationship with my husband, who I dated in middle school. Yes, we've been together for a long time. And then all through high school. But he was older, and he graduated. And we actually got married when I was 20.
Wow.
So I transferred. He was at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, stationed there. And I transferred and graduated from Campbell University there. And went on to work some odd jobs, was told I couldn't keep a job because my resume reflected different moves along the way. So that was back in the 80s when that was not cool. It's not cool now, but it really was not cool then. But then we started having children, and we actually moved to Charleston, South Carolina, where he attended medical school, and I had to work, didn't have a choice of staying home. So I worked. I found a field that I loved. It was actually Vacation Bible School one summer that led me to realize that I had a passion to help people that couldn't help themselves. We were in a very low social economic neighborhood, providing Vacation Bible School to families that were really suffering. And I found so much joy in doing that every day. And I knew that I wanted to end up in that field. So I actually went to work for DFACS, and I did Medicaid eligibility.
Wow.
And did a lot of financial stuff. That's how I pulled my business degree in there. I hated the business part, but boy, I loved talking to the families and interviewing them. So I did that to get him through medical school, basically, and pay child care because I had my first child then. But after that, I was very, very blessed, and then I was able to stay home, and we ended up having three girls.
Three really beautiful girls.
Oh, you're so sweet. I'm very proud of my girls. But I'm going to be honest with you. I did not enjoy staying at home with my girls.
Are you kidding? Those sweet girls?
Oh, my gosh. They were great. They were great. And I enjoyed the relationships that I built with moms, especially those when we were in residency, because we got very, very close. We had book clubs, we had Bible studies, we did a little bit of everything together, and I enjoyed that, but I was just not feeling fulfilled. And at the time, it was a very sticky moment because I felt guilty. I would never admit that in front of my girls, but I mean, I'd have Oprah on. My youngest still remembers watching Days of Our Lives with me. I mean, I was not the perfect mom by any means. I did things, you know, and I enjoyed it. But I will tell you this, and my husband will agree with me. I did a lot of raising those children on my own because of his hours, and he wasn't available then. But things got a little bit better when he finished residency, and I was able to get back into doing some things on my own and trying to figure out what I wanted to do because I knew I didn't want to go back into the business field.
Tell me a little bit about that discernment process. You know, here you are staying at home, who've got these great girls, and you're like, oh, life should be so wonderful.
Yes.
And yet you're kind of like, so what was God calling you, and how did you discern that God was saying, Mandy, something different is on the horizon, you know?
Well, I misunderstood some of his calls originally because I signed up to be a PTO mom, and I signed up to, you know, do teaching Sunday school, teaching classes, Girl Scouts, things like that. And Joy, I'm going to be honest, I just didn't enjoy any of that. I'm not a teacher. I always say when God was passing out the gifts of teaching, he skipped me and, you know, went on about his way. But I just really struggled with that because I'm like, okay, God, what am I supposed to do here? And, but you know what I loved? I loved having my girlfriends and my friends and other mom friends come over and tell me their struggles and tell me their problems. And I could listen all day. And so it was a journey, but eventually I looked into going back to school, and I wanted to be a therapist. I wanted to be a counselor. And so that's what I did.
So Mandy, tell me a little bit more about that guilt that you felt, maybe not enjoying the stay-at-home experience like some people love, and then maybe also the guilt in wanting to go back to work.
Yes, Joy, I felt a lot of guilt in not being that perfect stay-home mom that I dreamed about being, you know, especially when I had all three of my children and we were done. And I thought, this is what I've, you know, waited for. And then I didn't enjoy it as much as I thought I should. So
were your friends like, Mandy, or was that something you kept to yourself?
I kept it to myself. Okay. I didn't share that, especially with my children until they were much, much older.
Oh, sure.
And that's when they picked on me, like, Mom, we know, we watched Oprah with you, you know, every day or something. I just, you know, we had fun, don't get me wrong, but, you know, now with them and their amazing careers, I'm kind of okay with that because I don't see them staying home with children, to be honest.
Well, what about that guilt about going back and being like, oh, yes. I'm out. Yes, I'm free.
Oh, so, and that when you take your child to daycare for the first time, yeah. You know, and you cry all day. And there was so much a part of me that was like, hallelujah, I can go and go to work. But then you still struggle with that guilt of, do I go now? And for us, I had to when my husband was in medical school, so I didn't have a choice. Well, I'm sure he was feeling guilty. You know, there was guilt for everybody. For me, it was always looking at where we were and why we were doing what we were doing, because there was a bigger plan. And I knew that God had a plan for me, but I also knew that if we sat down and talked as a couple and had our goals and plans for each other, then there was no reason not to be happy and find the joy in where I was at that moment every day.
And don't you think that as a parent, fulfilling your calling is something to be an example to your children?
Yes.
Because wouldn't you hate it at the end of your life that you were like, I really always wanted to do this, but I didn't.
Right.
And what does that model for your children? What does that say to them? Right. You know? And so I think pursuing that mm-hmm. inner passion that you had to study people, to be a part mm-hmm. of something bigger than yourself and bigger than your home life is a great example to your children and gives them kind of the chutzpah to say, hey, if Mom can do it, I can do it. And so that's really a great example. But I do know, you know, when you're sitting home and there's that adjustment. I know I experienced that adjustment from going from teaching to being a stay-at-home mom. And, you know, just changing that programming in your brain of how life looks and then reversing it back and getting back into the career. And that transition can be really hard. And women in particular, I think there's a lot of pressure mm-hmm. on women to be all things. Be mm-hmm. that super mom mm-hmm. who's going to be at the PTA mm-hmm. and be that career woman who's going to bring home the bacon and fry it up in the pan. And so I guess from what I'm hearing in your story is that there are seasons mm-hmm. and you may not be able to do everything in every season, but that everything is making a plan. Now, how old were your children and where were they in their journey as growing up? Were they really young? Were they teenagers? How old were they when you...
Well, we had a little, we were here, and then we left here, and we went out to near Seattle, Washington, for my husband to do another school and another residency out there. So everything kind of revolved around him at the time, which was, some people would find that a sticky moment, but that was something I gladly jumped on. Our marriage came first, has always come first. And so I knew that it wasn't going to be a straight shot for me. But I also knew that my time would come. And so while he was finishing that program, I was preparing, trying to figure out what it was I wanted to do. And at that time, we had a high schooler, middle schooler, and Sarah was in elementary school. So
wow, you had the gamut.
I did. So we moved to North Carolina, and that is when I started school. But I had to, you know, I hadn't been in school for a while, so I signed up to take a study course for the GRE. My first class was the day he left for a deployment to Afghanistan.
Oh, my stars.
So talk about sticky moments.
So not only, you know, is your husband deployed, you're a single parent all of a sudden, mm-hmm. and you're trying to go back to school. Mm-hmm.
I love to tell a story about... And this was right after 9/11. So this is when things were not comfortable. We didn't feel safe. I was right there. I was actually on post when 9/11 happened, and Edward called and said, "Get off post right now." And by the time I got off, tanks were in place.
Ooh, I'm getting
soldiers
goosebumps.
Were there. I mean, so we lived right there with 82nd. He was in the 82nd, and we were right there in the middle of all of it. So to put you in that time frame, you know, here we were. But there were several of my girlfriends whose husbands were deployed. So our Sunday school teacher was deployed. He had to come back and, you know, get a substitute for our class. So I was surrounded by people that were going through this, and that was helpful. But I will backstory a little bit and tell you that I grew up in the church. I grew up with a strong Christian family, and faith was never pushed down my throat, but boy, it was instilled in me. So there was never a time when I was without my faith or without trusting in God. I always reverted back to that naturally, which I know is a gift, and I feel very blessed for that feeling. So I really went to church a lot.
If that church was open,
I was anchored in that church. And there was one night specifically, I remember we'd go on Wednesday nights and have dinner and have a little fellowship, and the kids would have programs, and they would look forward to that. And I remember getting the kids, the girls, that night and walking to my car. And I think I can say this without crying, but I remember feeling a hand under this elbow and a hand under that elbow. And it was my dad and Jesus carrying me.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't expect that to happen. Mm-hmm. But that,
you're making me cry.
That was a moment I will never forget. And I said, I'm going to be okay. Girls, we're going to be okay. And we were. And a year later, he came back. So we were okay.
But you had that original moment where you were just like, wow, I got to do this. And what am I going to do? And then you're worried for your husband's safety.
Oh, yeah.
The man you love is going kind of into harm's way. And here you are with three little girls looking at you like, Mom, what are we going to do next?
Right.
And you're trying to, and you're trying to put on a happy face.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. So that faith got me through it. And I knew, you know what the cool thing was? That happened very early on. And I knew from then on I was going to be okay.
It was all
right. I didn't know what was going to happen, but I knew I'd be okay. And we were. And I knew from then on for the rest of my life when we encountered sticky moments, just to rely on that faith and my angel, my dad.
And that's that peace that passes all understanding. You know, and you just, you can't put your head around it sometimes, you know, until it happens. And then all of a sudden you're like, ah, okay, we're going to be fine. I'm going to just keep doing this. Mm-hmm. And you could by putting one foot in front of the other and keep moving, you know?
Exactly. And taking it one day at a time. Once he got back, we moved back here. And that's when I started grad school, because by then I felt like my girls were old enough. They were very independent. I could do my thing. And boy, talk about finding joy. But finally having a moment in my life where I could go do what I wanted to do was really a lot of fun. And he was so supportive, and the girls were so supportive in me doing that. So
when you were, when he was deployed and you were on this solo parenting journey, talk to those folks that out there that are listening that are maybe single parents, or their husband is deployed, and or their spouse is deployed. And how do they find joy in that everyday life with three girls and knowing that you're not maybe doing exactly what you want to be doing and you're ready to pursue something else? But how did you find joy during that time, that season?
I took advantage of everything that was offered to us. I'll never forget, I took my girls at like 5 a.m. to see Faith Hill come in and do a concert. I was going to take advantage of it. But, you know, the military has a lot of support resources in place. And I'm a firm believer in taking advantage of everything that's offered. Because when you surround yourself by people that are going through the same thing or have experienced the same thing in your life, as you know, that really helps you. And I am an extremely positive person. And so I could always find the good in the day. I could always help the girls see, you know, we got to get through this, but guess what's happening this weekend? You know, I believe that, again, trusting and relying on your faith, but also relying on your friends and letting family and friends help. That was hard for me. But I do think that's what got us through that time.
That season, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, okay, fast forward. He's home. You're now getting the opportunity to pursue something you wanted to. And was it just like, you know, I always think about those moments, how God just opens those doors and there's no roadblocks. Or sometimes people really have to fight through it and make it work. What was it? The doors were open, or was it like, we got to keep plugging along? I've fought this long and I'm going to keep fighting.
Girl, I knew without a doubt I was going to study psychology. I knew I wanted to be a therapist. I wanted to be a counselor. It just, the thought just made me so excited. So I looked at AU, and there were two options, school counseling or this, and I saw school, and I went, oh, no, been there, tried that. That's not for me. So I did the clinical psychology round. But really what I started out, well, I first started out wanting to do marriage and family. And then I thought, you know, I don't know if I could sit all day listening to couples complain. So I didn't do that. That was like a one-day thought. But I really had a passion for older men or men, for example, with schizophrenia. Ooh. I don't know why I was attracted to that, but some the research and the articles and the case studies we studied, I just found myself being really drawn to that. So I did a few internships that were required for the program. And again, the third and last one was at on campus. Wow. And that's where I said, nope, I really enjoyed the mental health. I'm going to try to do the mental health counseling on campus, but if not, we'll see, because I love working with that age group. So I actually went to Career Services to get help with my resume.
Oh, there you go.
And my consultant there said, well, we're looking for someone with a counseling background. Would you be interested in Career Services? And I was like, well, what do you do? I had no idea what they did. And they said, well, we do presentations, and we are all about professionalism, and we do resumes and mock interviews and assessments, which was a big part of what I love doing. And we meet with students and just guide them through the process and help them get into grad programs, not, you know, through the process, not help them literally, but other than just preparing them to get mm-hmm. into the programs. So I said, oh my gosh, where do I sign up?
So when someone comes into your office now and you see them kind of struggling with where do I go, what do I do, mm-hmm. you know, like, or spitballing like you did, oh yeah, I like this, so I'm going to be a teacher, or oh, that sounds fun, so I'm going to do that. Oh, I don't want to do that. So how do you help them focus in, and like how do you help them discern what their calling is?
Well, we look at four areas. We look at what they love. What are their interests? So sometimes I'll ask them, what do they do in their free time when they're not studying or sleeping? What do you read for fun? What kind of TV shows or movies do you watch? So I try to narrow down their interest areas. Then I look at what skills do they have? What are they good at? Because I can have a student that wants to be a neurosurgeon with a GPA of 2.8, and that isn't going to happen, yeah. Right? So you got to be able to find somebody who's capable of doing the work to get them there. So I usually find out what their favorite classes are, what comes naturally to them. And then I look at their values. I look at what motivates them. What do they want to do in 5 years on the, you know, every day that's mm-hmm. going to make them happy and dry and make them feel like they had an impact somehow. And then we look at their personalities, because I work a lot with the nurses. And so when I'm doing mock interviews, getting them ready to go out and interview, I can tell the personalities by where they want to work. I mean, you've got your critical care units, you know, those are your more introverted, and your emergency room, labor delivery is more extroverted.
Wow.
So okay. I think we talk a lot about the personalities and what a good fit in the environment would look like. Mm-hmm. So we cover those four areas verbally, and then I give them some assessments for them to follow up and do. And then we meet again and we do an interpretation of their assessments. And then we start talking about some major careers. So we try to narrow it down. If we can rule out this, we can rule out that, then we kind of narrow those options down. And a lot of times we'll either figure out what they want to do as a career, or we'll figure out what they want to major in and then go from there. It can take a long time depending on the student. But most of the students that I see now or in the healthcare field, because that's what I work with, those students. So they've already narrowed it down, so it could take 2 or 3 meetings, whereas when I used to work with that pre-med freshman with the 2.8 GPA.
The neurosurgeon wannabe.
Boy, that ended up majoring in business. That could take, you know, and I try to tell them, don't rush it. It could really take a couple of years. So it just depends on the student and where they are on their thought process and plan.
So when you look at your journey and you compare it to the students of today, how long would you say your discernment process took?
I'd only had a great career counselor back then.
Yeah, right. You're like, they only had the Mandy Boland of it.
No, it's just, yeah. But I mean, You know, and honestly, that was a professor. That was not a career counselor. So I don't even remember if I went to career services. I probably didn't.
Yeah, I don't.
You know, whereas my youngest daughter, I mean, you know, she used it, did it the right way. And I'm like, you know, thankfully it got some, you know, got some information out there through her. But I didn't take advantage of those services when I was in college, to be very honest.
Well, let me ask you this. Being a mother of three, you know, very beautiful, smart, talented young women, what did they glean from your experience, or do you hope that they gleaned? Maybe they shared with you, Mom, I learned that you did this, and, you know, what do you think they got from watching your journey?
That's a great question. What do you hope that they got? Well, I honestly, at the time, was so scheduled, and, like, I'd come home, I'd take care of them, I'd cook supper, I'd do whatever I had to do, and then I'd study. And I felt so much guilt, you know, because I wasn't up there reading a book, you know. But that gave Edward a chance to play the daddy, right? So we took turns. I didn't know if they were getting anything out. And then we had my hooding ceremony, which was a very small, intimate ceremony. And they said, if any family members want to stand up and say something, now's your time. All three of my girls stood up and said something.
Oh.
And that is another memory I'll have forever, because they talked about what they learned from me. And I was sitting there bawling, because I'm like, really? You knew I was studying for all that night, you know, or you knew I was stressed about that exam or whatever. But they said that they did learn from me and how to manage my time and how to pursue your passion. So that was so worth it right there. But I think probably, you know, Rebecca ended up going to, and graduating from Augusta University. So she and I had some quality visits while she was in school in helping her pursue her passion. But I really think Sarah probably benefited the most, because she heard it all from a very young age.
She learned it from the womb.
She learned it very early on. And I'll never forget, you know, she went to Auburn University to major in interior design or design interior something.
Yes.
And they've got one of the best programs in the Southeast, if not the best. 2 weeks in, she calls me crying, going, I hate this.
Oh, wow.
I've got to change my major. And I'm like, oh my gosh, go to the career services, you know, and she ended up paying for all these assessments. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I could have just given you these assessments. But it was great that I was able to guide her through that process, because she definitely ended up where she needed to be. But right. it was kind of fun going through that with her, because I think it allowed me to help my students even more, you know, and better.
So you feel, I would say, very fulfilled by this journey that you've been on and where you are today. Where do you think God's nudging you next?
Oh. What,
do you have any, like, oh, I've always wanted this, or I'm really looking forward to spending time with grandchildren? Because I know you have a few cute ones.
Yes, 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 all of the above. So I'm at a really sweet, sweet place in my life right now, to be honest. You know, we're settled. Our children are going on their own. I do have two beautiful grandchildren that I think the world of. And boy, does that not put life in perspective for you.
Sure.
So there's a part of me that wants to retire and have more time to spend with them, but I can't see me not working. Tried that. Didn't happen. It didn't go over very well. So there's a part of me that I will eventually start my own business, because I think that there is a empty place for people who need guidance, who want to pursue different careers, especially after COVID. Now everybody's kind of reevaluating where they are in life and where their time is spent, we've noticed. And so I would love to work with people, but especially those that struggle with anxiety and depression, and pull in my counseling, my therapy skills, but still stay with the career focus, because that's where my passion is.
Do you think because of COVID that people, that anxiety and depression is just more common, more prevalent? Is it a byproduct? You know, I've heard someone who said the pandemic wasn't just COVID, it was alcoholism and it's depression and it's anxiety. And do you see that as true?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are everywhere. And just talking with my friends and families and people all over, I think some people handled it better who were already struggling with depression and anxiety. And I also see it where people who were not even aware that they struggled with that, I think COVID really Just made that come out to be a lot stronger.
Mm-hmm. Put a light on it.
Put a light on it, and it just made it worse. So I think, at least I think we're, I think finally we can say this, that we're talking about it a little bit more. It's not quite as hush-hush as it's always been. We fought for that for years, for people to be comfortable talking about their mental illness and their depression and their anxiety. So hopefully we're getting there to that point where we can talk about it openly.
Well, is there anything, you know, and I just keep asking about COVID just because it's so part of our world right now, right. but is there anything positive that you think came from this pandemic and this crazy time that we've been experiencing?
Yeah, it's funny because I ask all the students that question when I'm doing mock interviews with them, because I know that employer is going to ask them something, right?
Right.
So I do think the negative, of course, is all the sickness and the death. But boy, on the positive, I think it's made us all reevaluate our lives. And I don't think people, I'm watching people leave their jobs, quit working, change their career paths because they realize that life is too short and I'm not going to spend the rest of my life going to this job I hate or this environment that's toxic. Or, you know, it's just making us all reevaluate where we are in life and maybe reevaluate our goals. What do we want to accomplish by the time we leave our workplace or our career or whatever, or leave this earth? And, you know, what do I want to be remembered for? I mean, I think it's forced all of us to kind of realize that this could hit us and it might not end well. So,
right. Wow. Well, that's very interesting. So your journey isn't quite as instantaneous as COVID. I mean, you know, COVID has been about a year and a half, 2 years, but like your journey and your career discernment and path took many years. Mm-hmm. And when you come in and talk to somebody about, you know, changing career paths and that kind of thing, are they wanting it right now? Are you telling them that, you know, this could take a while? And what about going back to school to change careers? I mean, and no, I'm with you, girl. You know, at our age, and I can say that,
that's right.
That, you know, that's a big commitment to go, wow, I'm going back to school in middle age. And that's kind of like, ooh, that could be scary. So what do you tell folks? What about that journey and biting the bullet and making that big change?
You know, I think it's, you just have to be true to yourself and you have to believe, but boy, you got to make sure you know what you're doing and you're following your passion. And we are trying to move away from the word passion in career services these days. And all the articles you read say that puts too much stress on people because what if they're not passionate about something? So let me revert and say, follow your interest. Because I do believe that when you're in an environment, in a job, or an opportunity where you are a good fit, where it is interesting to you, you feel like you're prepared skill-wise, you are doing things that you value, that motivate you to do it every day, and that it is a good fit for your personality, I think you're going to be happy. And we're all about helping people find their happiness and their joy in everything they do every day. And you might not find all of that in one place, in one job, but once we do assessments and we think about what are those things that you value, you might have to do something volunteer, you know, wise. I did an assessment with the first year dental students last couple of months. I can't even remember now, but I was explaining to them that if they scored really high on altruism on one of the values assessment and they ended up working in a clinic where they only saw people with good insurance so that they could afford their dental plans, right? Mm-hmm. Dental work, which is so expensive.
Right.
But they might not feel fulfilled because they have this high degree of desire to give back or help humanity.
Others.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I said, you may have to do a Saturday free clinic once a month or go volunteer at a free clinic to get that fulfillment, because you really have to be fulfilled in those four areas in order to be happy every day.
Well, and I think, like you've said, you know, when you're doing the things that you're interested in and you're going to be happy as a person, most likely you're going to be successful at it too, because you're really going to enjoy it and work hard at it, you know,
that's
that
right.
kind of thing.
That's right.
So thinking about folks and going through a career change or deciding later in life, what is one piece of advice that you would tell them in this journey and finding joy in this discernment process? Because I think, you know, there were probably moments for you where you were like, this isn't so bad. And then there were moments like, this is really awful. Yeah. So how do you find joy in the journey of career discernment and all that good stuff?
I think there are a lot of things I would think of, but I think it's very important to meet with someone doing that job that you think you want. And we call them informational interviews. And now you can do it virtually, but LinkedIn is a great opportunity to connect with people. So you could just reach out to someone. We used to say, go buy them a cup of coffee. But now it's just like, hey, just ask if you can meet virtually. But,
yeah, we can Zoom. Yeah.
That's right. Can we Zoom for 15 minutes and not take too much of their time? But ask them, what do they do every day? What do they like about their jobs? What do they not like about the jobs? Research that job. Research the companies that you're thinking about working for. Do your homework. And if you're excited about it and you read, ooh, I got to go get a certification in order to do that, and that doesn't stop you, then you're on the right path. If you read that, oh, you need a year worth of experience to do this before you get to that level, and that doesn't defer you, I mean, then go do it. Go after it. But you've got to find that passion. I got to use the word passion. You've got to find it, because that's what's going to motivate you to get up and go to do whatever you need to do to fulfill the requirements to get there. And I think that's the key, is first of all, researching it and finding people that are doing that and finding out all you can about that position. And then taking the right steps to get you there.
Well, you've given us a lot of good career tips. I hope folks are listening. What a journey it's been for you. Good, bad, and wonderful, actually. And it sounds like you're in a pretty wonderful spot, like you like to say, the sweet spot. And so I really thank you for sharing that with us today. And just kind of want to say, what's one little takeaway that you would want someone to know about your journey? What's one thing that you learned in this whole wonderful life that you've lived that really speaks to where you are today?
Wow, that's a hard one. Definitely keep the faith, because I do believe, looking back, I truly believe that God had my best plans in his hands, and I knew there was a plan. Good old Presbyterian, right?
That's right.
I knew God had a plan for me, and I was just going to allow it to happen. Having said that, though, I did take advantage of everything that came my way. You know, when I was able to go take a class here or you know, get ready for a class or whatever it was, I took advantage of it. I didn't just sit and wait for it to happen, but I did take that initiative. But I just had faith that there was a reason that I wasn't a school teacher, because when I went off to college, my parents said, please get your education degree, because you can always fall back on that. And that was the thought process back then.
Oh, sure.
And I was like, I can't, y'all. I'm just not going to be a good teacher. And my oldest daughter is the best teacher ever. And I love it. And I love it. And my mother-in-law, you know.
She got the genes.
She got all the genes. I gave them all to her, which is a blessing. But I knew that God had a plan for me. And I was not going to settle for not being happy. I'm somebody, I'm extremely positive, but I have got to be happy, and I'm willing to work and change to make it where I'm happy every day, but I'm going to find the joy, and I wanted to work in a place where I could, you know, be learning something new every day, being with people that I loved, and I found that, and that's why I've been there for 15 years, because
right.
it's a really good place.
It's a great fit for you.
It's a good fit, yeah, great
well,
fit.
Well, that's a great thing to remember. So when you're thinking about this journey that you're on, to keep the faith, because you knew that God had a plan for you, and that gave you the confidence to explore every option that came your way, so that you could discern mm-hmm. where the right fit is. And here you are, and you've been there for 15 years, and you're enjoying it, and you're great at it. And it sounds like you might have some other fun things to add in the future. Well, Mandy, thank you so much for coming today. I'm so glad that you've been with us. And I just want to invite you to join us at Reed Memorial Presbyterian Church October 25th for a special service called the Kirken of the Tartan, because we are Scottish, even if you really aren't Scottish, and we're going to have some bagpipes. We're going to celebrate. It's called the Blessing of the Families kind of Sunday. So we hope that you will join us 10:30, October 25th at Reed Memorial Presbyterian Church. Join us every second and fourth Wednesday of the month on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, and our website, readchurchaugusta.org.